Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You're listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots Peace Council.
500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. And tonight we're going to be talking to Mayan descendant Susie Cawthorn. How are you, Susie?
I'm great, Blue Water. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I remember when we got on the phone with your grandmother. Remember that?
That was my comadre down in Mexico. I have something kind of interesting that I'd like to share with all you folks out there, and you will.
You bet.
When I was giving these... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
Did you want to say something? Oh.
No, you go right ahead. This is your time.
As I told you years before, I lived 30 years in Mexico. 30-odd years. And I became... I don't mean to say this in... I knew more than a lot of the Mexicans themselves knew about their own country down there. I lived it to the fullest. I had forgettable and unforgettable moments down there. But we flash forward. Here I am in Washington State. I was working as a tour guide in an Indian village, and we would teach the folklore and the customs of the Coast Salish Indians up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I was telling the children the story about the dog's tail. And I had to laugh every time I told it, because down there in Mexico, how many miles away is this, right? Thousands from one border to the other and beyond. There's this story about the dogs, and the dogs and the people, they all live together, and they all talk together, and blah, blah, blah. And they had this big party, and the dogs were told that they had to hang their tails up on the wall. And so long story shorter, the building catches on fire, and the dogs run out, and they just grab any old tail that they can find and put it on. Now, at least 2,000 miles away, 15 years later, here I am telling the children this story about how the dog people, because for Native American people, everything is people. It's the bird people, it's the tree people, it's the frog people, it's the dog people. Everything is people, as you know. So the dog people live separately, and they notice, the old dog noticed that inside the two-legged building, that would be us, they had these warm fires and water baskets full of water and baskets or bowls of food for all nice and warm and ready, and dancing and drumming. The eldest of all these dogs, he had been fine, but he ran back to the dog village. And, of course, as you know, when you come home from someplace, all your dogs get excited. Well, these did, too. They got all excited. Something, what did you see? What did you say? What did you see? What did you do? What's happening? Oh, no. Let me tell you about this great longhouse that these people have. Shall I go into all the detail, or shall I make it a little shorter? Okay, detail. Okay. And I want you to build me one. Well, you think the dogs said to that? They looked around at each other and thought, why do we want to build a great longhouse? He said, well, when we have a great longhouse, we'll have nice warm fires, and we'll have bowls full of food and water baskets full of water and dancing and drumming and storytelling, and everybody will have a great time. Well, of course, the dogs, the little tails went in, and they started wiggling. They thought, this is going to be great. So they all got together, and they built this great longhouse. So when they were done, the elder comes in and looks at it. He looks at the walls and the ceilings and the beams, and, oh, you've done a great job. This looks wonderful. And he looks all around in the fire pit, and everything was all set up. But he said, I remember when I watched the two-legged in their longhouse, they had to rest from all that dancing and drumming, and they had benches. And I need you to make some benches just like that. Benches all the way around.
Yeah, probably one. Years. so Popocatépetl decided that he was going to go have mismanaged for so many years.
It's karma, is what it really is, honey. That's all it is. And it's sad. It's very sad because I had so much fun. We all had so much fun. And we would, as tour guides ourselves, we would pump each other up too, you know. But we had something to gripe about. We'd go back behind the smoking room and we'd gripe about it. That was our therapy. Come back out with a nice, happy face and enjoy the children again. You know, it was really good. And one little girl just came up to me, beautiful round chubby cheeks, brown chubby cheeks, and she said, "I'm Jeremy." I go, "Really? Did you know that?" She showed me. She said, "Yes, I know. She's my great 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 grandmother." She said, "Great great 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 great." And I always said, "Honey, can I hug you?" And then she gave me a hug, and I think it was her mother or her. She said, "No, it's her great 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 grandmother." Of course, Mexico.
I love Donovan a little bit.
When Cortez came to Mexico, he hooked up with Malinche, who would be the Sacagawea. But down in Mexico, Malinche is hated by the African people.
Because
he's the snitch. And if you act like a snitch, then you're a Malinche. It's a bad thing down there. They consider Malinche a traitor.
That's pretty close to being BJ. Yeah, you know, Anglo hear these things, and, you know, BJ, and it means tight. And from what I understand,
because it's pinched. They think it's pinched. It's like
You're being
invented word for pinched. I can't say that over the air.
Well, Robert Triegel just explained to me that people south of the border believe that they're more passionate about things, and they feel people up here are like the difference between people in England and us. You know, and people over there are just so closed off, but, you know, people in Mexico think we're closed off.
Well, the difference is because, believe it or not, I'm going to get a lot of people on my back today, but there's more freedom down there than there is up here.
I can imagine, because there's less government.
Want to hire or don't want to hire a certain person or something about them that you don't like, if you don't want to hire them, you don't have to.
Right.
Yeah.
But if it was here, because I have these kind of rights, because I'm like this, I'm going to make you hire me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not right. There's not. That's just a grain of sand, as far as rights, because I've talked to people who've been down there, and they said, "Oh my God, it's great," and they say the same thing. You have more freedom down there. Of course. I was down there last night. Oh my God. It's much better.
That is crazy. Yeah, the Cherokees wanted to move back there, you know, and after they were herded into Oklahoma, and the U.S. government wouldn't let them go. That's where it come from.
Well, didn't Geronimo send a lot of his people across the border before he turned himself in? I'm talking about
the Cherokee, though.
Yeah, I know the Cherokees, but if Geronimo was in Arizona, New Mexico, area, and he sent his people across the border. I don't know if the Cherokees asked permission, but as you know, a lot of Cherokees ran and hit up in the Carolinas.
Yeah,
and they had to do the Trail of Tears.
The entire nation, they just wanted to leave en masse and buy a colony down there, and they wouldn't let us go.
Yeah, I think everybody should see the movie Five Nations by Kevin Costner.
Exactly.
It will bring you, everybody out there, I promise you, it will bring you to your knees with tears and shame.
And, then there's another one. There's been several of the miniseries. The one I don't see so much is the one that Wes Studi did that was really excellent. I can't even remember what it
was
called. No, he did. It wasn't a movie. It was like a 6-hour miniseries.
right.
And
I saw that. I
can't even remember what it's called.
His last name was Ross. His last name was Ross, and he was a plantation owner. He was Cherokee, but he became... he lived a white man's life with restrictions, right? And he was dressed in white man's clothes, and he had a plantation. And he was a good man and landowner, and Ross, I suppose, too, because I thought that was...
What I'm talking about is Wes Studi.
United We Stand?
No. Playing himself, he narrated like a 4 or 6 hour miniseries similar to 500
Ooh.
Nations, and I can't even remember what it's called. But he did a really good job.
We're slowly fixing
the village.
The sand?
We shall remain. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we shall remain. That's right.
We shall remain. Yeah.
Absolutely right.
And that's like a 5-chapter series, and that is something that everybody should see, too.
At Dreamkeepers. Everybody should see.
Oh, Dreamkeeper, my favorite, Grandpa.
Oh, man. I sat and watched
and
that 10 times. The same day I watched it 10 times.
Not anyone, but
I watched it 3 times the next day.
I was sitting on that couch and still right there.
Yeah.
That's a good couch. I'm going to reupholster that couch.
With me.
Excellent, excellent.
Ground, because I got all these damn dogs.
Yeah.
And now I have 2 cats, and my kids are back at being their fiance, so I got a house full.
Oh, wow.
I was turning into a hermit and enjoying it, but,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I enjoyed visiting with you.
I thought it was great when you came over. I really appreciated your visit and was glad to be of service.
Well, I couldn't. I wish I could have stayed there longer, but you know, my son's roommate was just wacko.
Yeah, you were going through that then too. Yeah.
And
crazy too.
Ended up stealing stuff from my son and just nuts and. Well, you know, if anybody's out there and wants to ask Susie a question, the number is 347-996-3318. And the number's right on the page in front of you. And we got about another 20 minutes or so before we're going to... I thought I'd replay the interview that Shirley MacLaine did with me back in July of 2004.
Okay.
And
I'm
going to
get you on here.
But what's up to?
Oh, yeah, she's a fascinating gal. She knows more than she lets on, you know. Of course, in her books, you can really see how she really is and thank you.
She interviewed me right after Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ.
You can have a
movie,
or
and she she buttonholed me about, you know, what I thought of the movie, you know, and I'm not wanting to be perfectly incorrect. I said something like, "Well, you know, I guess he was he had the strength of his own conviction, you know," and I just let it be at that because she didn't approve of the movie.
No, well, you know, to each his own. Different strokes. We all can't. That's what makes the whole thing diverse. It's like people think, oh, we've got to have peace on earth. Excuse me, we have north and south. We have day and night. We have black and white. We're always teeter-tottering. There's never going to be peace on earth. There will be better times, but not peace on earth, because we are balancing. We have to be in balance, teeter-tottering all the time. And that is in our own person. That we have to find that balance in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes we get too mad, sometimes we get too sad. You know, those extremes or almost extremes are hard on our spirit.
Yeah,
you know, we have to learn to balance ourselves.
See, that's right.
Make our own peace in our own little world, not so much peace on earth entirely. Because I listen a lot to Graham Hancock. I'm fascinated with this stuff, and I am going, I don't know when, but I'm going to South America, and I am going to drink the ayahuasca, because I have some issues I need to clear up, I realized that our skills, my family was going down there visiting him in Southern California, stirred up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, but
you know what they say about
Hawkins.
Wow, that was creepy.
They say, you know what they say about family. Friends are creators' way of apologizing for your family.
Yeah, and I've got a few of those too. I'm kind of with all the knocks. I've just kind of hermitized myself. And I really don't mind it.
Yeah.
You know, even where I live, you know, this lovely little community where I live. You know, there's always, when we have this beautiful view of Tahoma, a lot of people call it Rainier, but the original people here call it Tahoma.
Yeah, the capsule.
And I don't like to call it anything else, but...
Hey, Mark Borcherding, if you're listening out there, you know, give us a call. And he's kind of a resident expert about the Mayan calendar. He's been given a lot of insights about it, and really knows it backwards and forwards. And
I have no fear of that, whatever it may be, because as you know, it is what it is. You know.
Yeah,
if
right.
We're meant to be saved, we shall be. But I always embrace the Bible the New Testament, where the meek shall inherit the earth. To tell me, this is my, this is my little pacifier, because I need that, because if I could get myself all in a ruffle about 2012, what am I going to do? I'm shortening my life just worrying about it. Excuse me.
Yeah.
If it's going to be, it's going to be, you know. If it's not meant to be, you can stand under a tree and you'll be safe.
You can
be right out there in the middle and you'll be safe. If you are one of his chosen few, it's not, this is just a shell that we're traveling. This is just a vehicle. You know, our spirit, I believe, it's just me, our spirit will go on. And then, I don't know if you've ever read any of Brian Weiss's stuff. Dr. Brian Weiss, he's a regressive hypnotherapist. And he has done many, many renowned cases of taking people back in time.
You know where she is? She's in protective custody.
And... at the moment of death, they say, even the person who had died in a fire, which would be the most worst way to go. And this person said, well, that's just my shell, but here I'm fine. His spirit was looking at him dying because he was under hypnosis. He said, but that's just my shell. Here I'm fine. So it kind of, that helped me with my pain from losing my son. You know, a lot, because I figure, you know, you just got to make yourself, you got to put yourself together.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we do have Mark on the line. Say hello, Mark. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, meet Susie Cawthorn. This is Mark Borcherding, the fellow I told you about, my calendar whiz.
Goodness gracious, would I love to talk to you for hours.
Well, what day sign were you born on?
Their military database.
Well, I was born May 1st, 1949, in Southern California.
May 1st? Mm-hmm. 1949?
Yep.
So you were May 1st, 1949. You were born on the third day of the Azure Reed cycle.
I apologize.
And that's men or three eagles. Indicates some eagle energy there. Eagle and Reed.
Well, that's good for perspective. He talks about eagle as a totem. He tells you to have a better perspective on things, so that's a good point.
And you've got... He pairs with Akbal. So, Eagle and Akbal, which is the dreaming intuition cave and
sitting on information.
Underworld and all that stuff. So Eagle Underworld and Cage. Interesting.
Sometimes I
and
think
Reed.
I have been.
Huh?
No, I do. I have some kind of gift that I don't quite understand yet. And that's another reason why I would like to try ayahuasca someday, because I want to understand what my gift is. I'm not quite sure. I perceive things, and it just seems very easy for me to tell what's going to happen. But
yeah.
There's a bunch of other things. It's an odd gift. I think it's a little bit of everything. And in my family, we have that. So you have three eagles. Oddball, did you say?
Hold on a second. Well, Oddball is a pair. When you go in the 13-day cycle, and you flip it over to the other side, so you go 1 to 13. Each one will pair as they go into the center. And so you flip it over, and it'll give you 11 Oddball. Which will be your kind of counterbalance within that same cycle that you're balancing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Oddball and Eagle. They're both typically on my medicine, will it be a black or a blue color? Both of them would be.
Oh, really?
That's also the cycle that Pakal was born in, the guy that did the tomb-lit temple inscription. So your birth is in that same cycle. He was actually born and died in that same. He was actually born and died on his parents. He was born on 8 Ahau, and he died on 6 Esnab, and those are the pairs. So his birth and death were literally the pairing in that same cycle that you are.
Oh, my goodness. That's totally fascinating. And
so I would say that, that probably...
Go ahead. You were going to say?
He's got the 90.
So I would say that, energetically, you have some probably some kind of... You might feel compelled or be drawn to that possibly, so you might want to go down and look at that. Sometime maybe after you do that, I can
Hey, Susie, what day and month did you say you were born?
May 1st, 1949.
Okay. I'm checking something else.
My last number is 11.
Do you know what time of day you were born?
11:15.
In the morning?
When they looked at the clock. Yep.
Okay.
When they looked at the clock, it was 11:15, so it could have been 11:11. I wouldn't be surprised. 11 follows me.
Well,
those are the pairs.
I gave you another little bit, though, too, and this one's going to be a little bit more as we move between world cycles. That one shows this one has three positionings, kind of. One is a forward flow of time. It anchors to the current Mayan Zulcan calendar, long count. And it anchors to that. Has another one that's another flow of time, which is moving backwards. So it's coming back at us from what we call the future backwards towards us. From the next world cycle. That one's anchored in a junction between human consciousness awareness of that time period along with the Mayan calendar.
Hey,
and then
Mark,
we have a unity point, which is balanced between the two.
Mark, got a quick question. Did you say there was a pairing involved here?
There's all kinds of pairings, balancing things that go on within the Zulcan, actually any system. It's what she was talking about earlier about duality and balancing and trying to find things.
And pulls.
It's the same thing. If you in the Mayan Zulcan, you have 13-day cycles. So the seventh day actually pairs with itself. It mirrors itself. And then you got the sixth and the eighth. The five and the nine, and each of the pairs will add up to 14, 2 times 7. And the first and the last day, the 13th day, will pair. So they pair as they move inward, so the 7th day will balance. And she was born on the 3rd day, which means the 11th day of the cycle, 3
no,
and 11.
No, I was born
14.
On the 1st.
Hmm?
I was born
no,
on the
you were
first.
Born on the 3rd day of the cycle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Three men you were born on. So you're born on the 3rd day of the cycle, which pairs with the 11th day, which is 11 Akbal. So it, that's kind of the calendar balancing. So you have Eagle and you have Akbal, the cage. So and that's an interesting combination because it's almost dual energy. It's almost like the Eagle has the vision energy, but the Akbal energy is also dream and intuition, like the Aborigine dream time. So it's like a dream time eagle that can fly through the underworld. It's kind of the opposite of what you normally think of an eagle. So that one, if you pair with that and you balance these two things together, what it means is it's an eagle that can fly through the dark. And that can be helpful because when you're traveling from one world to the next world cycle, you kind of have to go through the period of darkness that the Popol Vuh talks about. The mind book is great for Popol Vuh.
Now you've totally inspired me.
So that gives you some interesting. Now I'm switching over now, so I'm moving out of that realm and I'm moving into another Zulkin system. And this Zulkin system I'm looking at your birth at is for the next world cycle. So it gives a perspective of looking at what we would call forward in time from our world cycle to the next
flow of time.
And then the reverse flow of time, which is looking from the next world cycle back into our world cycle. And then the third position is where the two balance and merge. So now I'm going to give you a little bit of reading from that point of view on your birth. So I'm going to give you the reading forward flow, looking forward from our world cycle to the next. In that, what it's saying is the energies that were kind of guiding things from you from birth as we move forward, as you move forward. And those were things like would have been important. Showing us things that were important to you as you were growing up and as you grew up. Things like loyalty, friends, good virtues, working with form. So I wouldn't be so surprised if you did something that built things or did things with forming things. And this probably overlaps into dimensionality. So this would explain why you were talking about Graham Hancock's things where he takes and talks about entanglement and quantum physics.
That's
the dimensionality. So it's your interest in it's actually tying all the way back into your birth and entering. The pairing are what's working with this energy of heart and form and all this is order, eternity, and willingness to make sacrifices. So those are probably things that may have been showing up in your life as you were born and moved forward.
That
now we'll look
sense.
At the other side, going backward. Now these are things probably, in my doing readings for people, this tends to be things that have been getting stronger since around, say, 1998, maybe even before 1998 and after, and getting stronger. And these are things that may be showing up in your life, becoming important and maybe more important. And these are things about focusing, molding awareness, like forming your own awareness and things.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard you talking about that a few minutes ago.
flourishing, to different stages.
Flourishing, prosperity, and ascending, moving up, or ascending and moving through dimensionality and presence as you're doing it. And then things like fearlessness, reason, and justice. So that tends to indicate that you might be going out there and doing a little bit of warrior activity. You might be more than likely a little bit more willing to stand up and fight some stuff, probably especially for some other people.
Oh, yes, I would give my life. I would in like you say from 1998 for a cause that I truly believed in, I would give my life for it. I would not think twice. And that's what's wrong with people today. They don't have any cojones, you know? They don't like something. In Mexico, you know what I mean? In Mexico, I don't know. The people down in Mexico, I'll take that back, because they have lost their revolutionary mode because they've been beat so long by the political party. They've been beat down so long. It's hard for them to stand up. And really, and then all the other stuff that's going on down there. It's really hard for them to stand up and speak up, and it's not easy, but I would.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I know what I've done in other lifetimes. I know I was a revolutionary.
What'll help you with that?
A woman revolutionary. I'd love to know.
You have that cycle that's in is a jaguar cycle. So you have some jaguar energy from the future that's there to draw on. And in their culture, and many, all the way through even South American stuff, jaguar was one of the most powerful.
I know.
And this is interesting
because
the jaguar calls
the
ties back in. Oh, excuse me. Jaguar also ties back into your Akbal.
Okay.
He also wears a mirror on his foot. Have you seen that? Petroglyph?
Well,
he wears a mirror on his foot. Ah, ha, 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 I know what you're thinking. But that was, to them, Mira was a reflection. Because I remember seeing that petroglyph or the carving of the jaguar. He was a brother. I don't want to get confused. But yes, the jaguar sounds very, very, like you say,
and you know,
a lot of energy.
Ixchel, right? You know
Ixchel?
Ixchel, I-X-C-H-E-L. Have you heard that?
Ixchel.
Yeah.
Ixchel? No. What is Ixchel?
That one's something that you might want to look at a little bit and might help give you some guidance as you're moving along here and help you
on your warrior
activities.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
where
you two come
life.
Together? So on one hand, in your birth, we have a lot of things about dimensionality, form, loyalty, love, heart, energy, that kind of stuff. But the future moving back,
I
did a lot of warrior and fighting activity and justice and reason. Okay, now you're mixing the two. And when you mix the two,
it's okay.
A zero point.
It's okay.
This is the third reading. And it's the zero point between, or the balancing point between. It represents the doorway, or bridge that you're walking across, going from one world to the next. So this one tells you kind of, it fine-tunes you, right? Gives you the idea how to kind of zero in on things. And it's saying things about exploring, desiring being awake, aware, awake. Prophecies. And yet, it has the power of the never-ending tone of love. So that's becoming even more pronounced from your birth and combining with the reason and justice and fearlessness on the other side, moving backwards in time. And then it's working with energies of flow, universal water and thankfulness or gratitude. Those are things that are guiding energies. Those are things that are going to really put you and connect you to that never-ending love thing. And that's creative. So it's going to be that. Just simple thing, and this is actually true for everybody, not just you, but that gratitude
love.
Every day,
it sounds like
that will make you strong.
Of course. Honey, every meal I take into my mouth, I thank the four corners. I thank Creator for His abundance, and I thank Mother for her sacrifice. Because she made it, and she brought it to life. And I,
so you're
meal,
already doing
I
it.
I thank the Creator.
Doing
oh,
exactly
yes.
what you need
oh, yes.
to do.
No, honey, I was going to say, it's that intuition, and I really, really appreciate you telling me this, because this so solidifies so feeling that I have about my own spirit. It's really hard. I don't know if anybody else out there ever has this feeling. Man, it's kind of tough because you go through life alone. You're born alone and you're
a little patient, but it's definitely worth it.
So you're going through life alone, talking to yourself about what you need to do and what's right and what's wrong. And I see so much wrong, like, you know, in Dreamkeeper, Coyote, the trickster. He says, if I die, who would ask the people what not to do by doing it? You know, in Dreamkeeper. And I know Will remembers that.
Yeah.
And it's like I've learned from my mistakes. I've seen so much wrong. Sometimes I'm accused of reminiscing, and it's not that I'm reminiscing or lamenting, because I don't regret anything that's ever happened to me. I lost a son. I don't regret anything that's ever happened to me, because it brought me to where I am today. And I think I am in a much better spot spiritually today. And I do believe that my son who died, it was hard. It was definitely hard, but if nobody was going to pull my head out of my rear, you know, so I had to do it myself. And I just realized that he was given to me for a short period of time, and he was an angel sent to me to jumpstart a spiritual awakening. Because ever since then, I have been walking with one foot in the spirit world and one foot in the material world. Constantly. I see spirit in everything. I can't go to the river and not bring back a bag full of rocks, because they all talk to me. You know? Oh, pick me, you know, like donkey. Oh, this one's got lightning in it. Oh, look at the face on this one. And they all talk to me. I go out in the woods, even in Mexico, I go out in the woods depressed. What am I going to do? And blah, blah, blah. I take my dog and my machete, and I come back with remedies, and I come back with dinner. And that was an abundance for me. So like you say, I do, and I am grateful. One time I was left for dead. And when I saw the sunrise, I thought, and I can see it in my mind now, those purple pink clouds that just started to come and show from the sunrise. And I said, thank you, Lord. With this sunrise, I know you're going to let me live. And every time I see a beautiful sunrise, you know, I get up early enough. Yeah, I am. I remember that day and remember that I am still alive. And I am grateful.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't been checking. We've got another caller. Hey, who have we got on the line? I apologize for keeping you so long.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, who's there?
Hey, what's up?
My name's Richard. How's it going?
Okay, Richard, what's up? What you got on your mind?
Not much. Just wondering how to get a reading.
Where's Claire?
My mind birth chart. Good.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Is this a three-way wheel?
Yeah, just where all the four of us are on here. You and me and Mark and our guests.
And our guests, great.
Yeah.
Okay, I can do something.
Hey.
Hello?
Yes.
What day you're born on?
December 10th, 1974.
December 10th, 1974.
Big boy.
But you were born on a day called 10 Taj or 10 Mulak, which is and it's in the cycle of a Hal. So that's a Hal is the sun. So you got probably things with the sun is going to be kind of overall guiding energy for you. The glyph that you're born on is typically thought of as a day of kind of like payment or a repayment or something. And that payment is usually done for the purpose of balancing something. And then, hold on a second, your 10 indicates some things about creativity. Especially if you kind of let, the main thing with creativity is you got to do is let it flow. And as Blue Otter says, and a lot of the other people, elders that he said, is one of the best ways of doing that is just making the connection with the creative. So the more you do that, the more creative you will. And that creativity Well, allow you to turn around and use it for the other thing for pain. And so that is in that's your birth in the current Mayan calendar. I'll look it up. Hold on, let me look at the other one and see what it shows, because it'll show us a little bit more. December 10th.
I don't know. They didn't tell me that. Why would you?
Hold on, just bear with me a second, because I got too many windows open here. Can't see anything. Okay, so this one's going to be with the different time flows. And so I don't know if you can, hopefully you can remember there's forward, backward, and a centering or a zero-point time flow. So on the forward, it shows things about, it's a read energy, things about shaping awareness, prophecies. Another thing showing up here about creation, fundamental aspects of creation, and your creativity tying in with that. So again, that's going back, communicate with the creator, get in touch with that, and that is going to really make your creative abilities and artistic abilities work really well. You also have things in this that instinct, life force, and sacred power, when those things all go together. So it's instinctively doing this and using it, and then it's essentially a sacred power doing that artwork or whatever it is that you're doing for creating. So that's on forward, going since you're born, going forward. Going backwards, it's showing things about probably in the last few years you've probably been very inquisitive, wanting to know a lot of stuff. It's probably especially things that have to do with healing. Other things, achievement, probably have become starting to become more generous. You also have on that backward flow what we were talking about earlier for her, the never-ending tone of love. And you also have some alcohol energy of intuition and abundance and things. So things that have to do with learning, healing, love, generosity, and intuition doing that. Those are probably things that are getting much stronger in your life. And you were also, that day is also sitting in the Jaguar circle, just like hers was. So you have, so we have an interesting synchronicity here. There's a couple parallels of overlap between you and her.
Funny, but nothing is a coincidence.
Now, when the two come together, you have a clock energy. And this is, what this is a doorway of you walking through, like we said, moving from one world cycle to another. It has ideas of catalyzing things, shaping things for good. Family and family-type relationships would be very significant, probably. You have this thing about creating things at a fundamental level showing up again, the same one that was on your birth, on the forward flow. And then you have things about illusion, supernatural power, and ancestors. So that would say you'll probably be learning, stepping into this idea of creating an awareness of the holographic aspect of reality or dream time, like the Aborigines say, and what they say, everything's kind of illusion, and manipulating that illusion, kind of like Neo in the Matrix. Maybe. Supernatural power and ancestors, those two things are probably going to go together. So I would say, and that will be probably part of your family, too. So your family isn't just on this side of the fence. Your family is on the other side of the fence, too, what we call death. those can be guiding you just as much as the living, and sometimes better. So listen to those things.
So you're calling us from Arizona?
Yes.
Around Tempe?
Deer Valley.
Yeah. I looked up your phone number to see where you're calling from. I knew 602 was Arizona, but that's pretty. I worked down there for a while. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah. Actually, I just moved back.
It is beautiful. The desert has its beauty.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that the desert is barren, but it has its beauty. everything has its beauty if you look at it with God's eyes, you know.
Yes, it does.
People forget to look into the face of a flower and see the synchronicity and the beauty. And why were the flowers made? You know, to delight our eyes, of course, and the bees and the birds and all that stuff.
Wow.
There's beauty in everything. The desert is actually, I like it. I like to look at it. And we have the best weather in the whole country.
What a load of me.
Believe it or not. Now, your guest, Will, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Richard.
Oh, yeah, Richard's calling.
Okay.
But Mark is the guy doing the reading.
I'm in surgery for hours.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you, Richard. Do you have any other questions?
That's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, you bet.
Very informative. Thank you.
Call in anytime. Thanks for calling, guy.
All right. Thank you very much.
If anybody else wants to call in, we're at 347-996-3318, and we'd love to speak with you.
Well, Will Otto, you did her Torah portion?
Yeah, I looked at it, and it was part of talking about the Levites, Moses speaking to the Hebrews just after the two sons of Aaron died, having given an unauthorized sacrifice. So that's why I asked you about a pairing, because there was a pair of them, and they were doing something they weren't supposed to do. And I know,
look,
Susie.
I'm trying to keep myself out of trouble.
Oh, I know, Susie. She'd get together with somebody else, and she'll misbehave. I know.
Well, I do have a partner in crime. She's my buddy.
How's she doing?
We just. Well, this is my friend Tina, who's still working there where I used to work, but she can't work there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It's too hard on her. But she's my partner in crime. I have so much fun with her.
How's your daughter?
It's crazy. SB, she's doing good. They went through a really rough cycle, and I was not told by her. I was told by him, my son-in-law, or my future son-in-law. They've been together for 8 years. Good grief, my son-in-law. He was more honest with me than she was, which kind of broke my heart a little bit, because, you know, I don't lie to my kids. I never have. It is what it is, because my mom was such a hypocrite, and I saw what she was doing, and I go up into her face as a little kid, and what is this? No, you're crazy and blah, blah, blah. She sent me to a shrink and everything. Dude, I thought I really was crazy. And
yeah,
then
mine
I realized
did,
it ain't.
Mine did the same with me.
Same?
Oh, yeah.
But we're special, dude. We're special. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just, my sister says, you're different. I said, look at Pat. In my world, I am not different from anybody else. But in your world, I am.
That's right.
In your world, you know, you're not different from anybody else, but in my world, you are different.
Well,
this is a joke.
I think the church invented psychiatry just for the purpose of, branding people that they didn't like, and it started with the Inquisition and ended up with your local psychologist, you know.
And your local police and everything like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're losing that police up here in town. It's finally. The jig is up.
Oh, there's not enough crime.
It goes on everywhere. Yeah, it goes on everywhere. But they, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I better not talk about this. That's politics. Let's not talk about politics. I won't touch. Religion, I'll touch. But politics, no. Because politics is, there's too many haters out there.
Yeah, no kidding.
And religion, we get passionate about religion too. But I was baptized Catholic. I was baptized Methodist, and then when I went to Mexico, when in Rome, you know, I was baptized Catholic, and I'm not ashamed of it at all. I mean, Catholic priests are the only ones that can do a successful exorcism, so there's got to be something there.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do stuff. But I'm not saying it's the greatest, and I'm not saying it's not corrupt. We all know that. Oh, well.
Is your
maybe I shouldn't rock the boat too much, but organized religions to me, my God is out in the woods.
Yeah.
It's out in nature.
Is your comadre still alive?
Everywhere. Yes, she is. That knucklehead. For a while, I had a walkie-talkie, and of course, you know, in Mexico, it's not happening so much. They seem to have gotten their problems under control. But at the time that I talked to her, it was crazy down there.
Well.
And the minute I got her on the phone, she starts, you know, yapping at me. Oh, do you remember so-and-so? Oh, well, you got, shut up, and stuff like that. And I go, oh, my God, that's why I don't want to talk to my comadre. I don't want to know that stuff anymore.
Well, is she like a...
I don't deal with that.
Is she a curandero, or is it a practitioner, or what?
Well, my daughter-in-law, she's from the same town as my comadre, and I saw my daughter-in-law a month ago. I was down there with my son and my granddaughters, and with my mom's 90th birthday, and I just wanted to go and come back. I didn't want to mix with those people. But my son, oh, I had such a great time. Anyway, his wife, good friends with my comadre, although there's she could be better, but Mexico, there's no age difference.
Tell everybody what a comadre is.
I was happy.
Oh, a comadre is, she is my daughter's, she's my daughter's godmother.
Okay.
Did I say that right?
Right.
She's my daughter's godmother, yeah.
So she's your co-mother.
Yes, co-mother, exactly. That's co-madre, co-mother, exact mm-hmm. translation, yeah. Hit it right on the head there.
Because I remember we
and,
talked.
She said she doesn't practice anymore.
Oh,
she doesn't heal anymore.
Remember when you and I called?
Well, I thought that was great. She just it was a three-way translation thing, and it was fun.
They don't have otters down there, so she said my name down there would be Nutria Zulu or Blue Nutria.
Oh, you silly! That's right. You remember that?
Nutria's like a swamp rat, you know. That's close enough.
You have with no tail.
But
yeah.
I can't. What
but
was
the tail's the most important thing.
What was it that she told me? I can't remember what it was. I can't
about
remember what
the Cummings.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember what the gist of the conversation was?
Well, the gist of the conversation is what is coming. And I think we all, in our spirit, feel this. It's just the news media. You know, there's control with chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You put people under chaos and you can control them. So that's what they want. So, but I think in our spirits, we pretty much all believe that there is going to be some hard times, but we will overcome them. You know, we will come out smelling like roses. I don't believe this whole 2012 end of the world apocalypse. You know, I choose not to.
Well, neither do the Mayan elders.
Because I want to send out a positive feeling. If we're all going to be under the thumb of whoever's causing all this chaos, and we really do know who it is, they want to put us under stress. I'm not going to send to the universe stress. I'm going to send to the universe love and acceptance. And then maybe it will change. Maybe it is going to be good. But if the government keeps everybody under stress and under chaos and under control, that's a lot of negativity.
That's basically
what
we
have to.
That's what the elders said when they were on my show. They said, you know, there's nothing written in stone about 2012, and you know, what could happen could be different in one town and than from the next, depending on the consciousness of the people that are living there.
Well, I figure up here where I am, there's plenty of water, and there's
mm-hmm.
plenty of critters in the woods.
That's right.
And that's what we're getting ourselves ready for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, my sidekick, she watches Doomsday on TV, and she talks to me, and she gets all upset, and she gets all worried, and you know, they're doing this, and they're doing that. I said, look, calm down, Tina. It's going to be okay. You and I are survivors, period. She's a number 11, just as I am. My life path number in numerology is number 11, and so is hers. And we say the same things at the same time. We think the same things at the same time. It's like, oh, just get out of my head, will you? She is funny, but she watches this, and it's don't let yourself become part of the chaotic. Just let roll with it. Just roll with it. There's nothing you can do about it. You can stop parallel to the yin-yang, and it's not going to do you any good because you got a negative thought. I mean, whatever. Oh, I'm going to be a survivor. God has it made for us. We'll be all right. And I don't think, I don't know. Just I don't want to be in the cities. It's like Red Elk said when I was with him in New Mexico with a group. And I have his picture here right next to me. He said that the big cities is what they're doing is they have big cisterns of water underneath the big cities. And oh my goodness, the drought is causing the dam to go down. And oh my goodness, the drought has caused the lake to dry up. They're taking all this water and putting it under the cities because when the you know what hits the fan, people will have to be in the cities because that's the only place they'll be able to drink water, which is essential for us, duh. So that's how they're going to control people. It makes no sense. Here next to Tahoma, where I live, there's about, I could say easily 10 lakes around me full of fresh glacier water. Springs pop up everywhere, you know. It's natural springs. To me, God has me here for a reason, and I don't know what it is yet. But I have totally, you know, I go down to Southern California, and I just, first couple of times I went down, I go, oh, this feels weird. I just don't understand it, you know. But the third time I went down, oh, I missed the embrace of the trees. You can't, the people here are not, I got up, when I went down to San Diego, I get on the plane. Leaving Washington State, we had a stopover in Oakland. All the way to Oakland, the plane was quiet, peaceful, everybody doing their own quiet little thing. People bored in Oakland, coughing, sneezing, hacking, talking, making noise. And I go, ooh, the difference in the cities and the states, you know, the stress states and the not-so-stress states. You can't, how can you be stressed when you're on the freeway going to work, let's say going to Seattle, even if you're in the traffic, you see bald eagles flying by, you see red-tailed hawks flying by, you see different wildlife, the trees, I mean, all this talks to you. It just talks to you. I don't know. I have a cedar tree right next. I don't know if I showed you, Will. Right next to the lot where I live.
Mm-hmm.
This cedar tree. The Coast Salish would harvest the tree. They would take about the width of my hand and they'd peel it off. And then they would make their baskets. They would make their clothes. And they could only harvest that tree once in its lifetime because otherwise it would die. And so the cedar tree that's next to, from my bedroom window here, I can see it. It's been harvested. That tree's been here for a couple hundred years at least, because it's now 100 years old. Where I live used to be a gathering area for the Native Americans here, for Indian Henry and his tribe. And the trees talk to you. They just do. People talk about Bigfoot. I'm going off on another tangent. Why can't anybody find it? Because Bigfoot can talk with the trees. He's one with all those creatures. All the people out there, the tree people, the bird people, the four-legged, he's one with them. That's why they'll never find it.
Yeah.
Because he's one with them. He can talk to the trees. He can probably be a tree. I was watching something very interesting the other day about Bigfoot. In fact, one of the biggest Bigfoot findings was here in the next town from where I live, where they saw they found a body where he had laid down, and he left his body print there in the ground where he had laid down. It's just over here, stone throw mineral. He's all around here. I've heard him. Not up here. I heard him once when I was in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
I was skinning a deer. Me and my son, we drug the deer up the hill. Well, let me tell you, I saw it get hit. Can't get me now, anyway. Too late. He's disappeared. I saw deer get hit, and I said, hell no, I'm not leaving this good meat here on the side of the road. And so my son and I got my knife, start sharpening it. and we drag it up the hill so we're not on the side of the road completely. And then I hear this big, both my son and I, Omar and I, big, long screech. But we were in a canyon. Because it was 99, I don't remember exactly where, but it was, the river was going right by us and the road too, so it had to have bounced off the hills. And I couldn't figure out where it came from. But it sounded not very far away. But I figured he might have been claiming that kill. And then it did it again. And then my son answered it. And then it didn't do it anymore. So that was kind of cool. I've seen a flying saucer. Oh, that's what they called them back in the day. UFO. And I've heard Bigfoot. So that's a biggie for me.
They're around
I'm
there.
Blessed.
There's a bunch of them up there. Let me know when you get talked. Let me know if you get talked out. You know, we'll do something else, or if you want to keep talking.
Oh, goodness gracious! You got me on for a while then. If I can go blabber, to me, all right, Bigfoot. This is just my theory. This is kind of mixed with Graham Hancock's, but sort of kind of. To me, Bigfoot. And anybody out there, I don't know what you think. It'd be interesting to hear somebody else's input. But Bigfoot is probably a Cro-Magnon left over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I play with the thought that the aliens came and saw all these monkey men, these Cro-Magnons, you know, almost on all fours, and thought they would, hey, let's do an experiment. So through artificial insemination,
mm-hmm.
there's the missing link. Through artificial insemination, they created this better human being, or a human being. I think it was they altered the genetics of Bigfoot or Cro-Magnon, and this Bigfoot that's running around here is probably some of the critters that they couldn't catch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's ever thought of that, but I like to play with that thought. But that missing link is, to me, the artificial insemination from the ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw another one at you. Edgar Cayce says there's no such thing as ETs. It's only us in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been written into some scripts. That's our future if we don't make some changes. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of believe so.
That's kind of scary.
It does make sense. When I was in Mexico, I took a kind of a beginner intermediate class in Gnostic science. And it's something that I have a very open mind. I'll bring in any kind of information, and then I will decide whether it's good or not for me, even if it's not good for somebody else. Like, I think everybody should look, read up about Gnostic science, what it's about. Alchemy is not so much turning lead into gold. It's change over it. Like, you, I know you understand. It's change. The alchemy that I was the such and such a person and now I'm better, so I've changed. I've done alchemy. You know, it's a makeover is alchemy. But the Gnostic science is something, well, of course, Nostradamus, he was Gnostic. And I didn't know that at that time, that he was Gnostic. But I was totally engrossed in Gnostic science, too. But your guest, Richard, is he still with us?
Mm-hmm. No, it's Mark.
Is he still
Mark.
There?
Mark's still
there. Oh, Mark. Okay, sorry. Richard
left,
was the other
left.
Guy. Mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark, you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, he's still here.
Oh, come on. Interrupt us anytime.
Nah, you're on a roll.
No, I'm not. You silly.
But you know, other possibility is Bigfoot's could be like leprechauns or fairies or something like that. They could be moving from one dimensionality or reality to another one. Like maybe they're doing something like that.
I saw something on, because I don't have cable or satellite or anything. I just get Netflix. And YouTube. And I was watching on YouTube how there was a person who was a witness to the fact that he saw a Bigfoot standing and boom, in a flash of light, he was gone. And then I had to leave to do an errand, and I've got to get back on that and look up into it more. I'm sure he could be a shapeshifter. Why couldn't he? He's a shaman. Bigfoot is a great shaman. He's the shaman of the woods. He's the owner of the woods. He's the god of that kingdom that he lives in. I think he's marvelous. And, you know, you hear good things and bad things, but I hear mostly good things. I think Bigfoot will also assist us in the future when he sees that this change has come over us and with these, pole shifts or whatever this change is that's going to be. I can't logically pinpoint anything.
John Red Hat was... John Red Hat Duke has passed away now, but he was an Air Force officer for 30 years, and he did a lot of duty at Cheyenne Mountain. But he told me that Air Force cadets that do guard duty up against the mountain on the fence, they're told not to shoot Bigfoot if they see him, or they'd be prosecuted for human murder.
Oh, great. That should be the law. Everywhere. Crackpots going out there trying to make it rich with this dumb thing that they've had one in a freezer or something.
Right.
I'm going, Jesus, you guys. Let me put this one out.
Just leave alone.
I know. They will help us. I'm sure they will assist us in the future. I think they're just waiting. As maybe the ETs, but I prefer a two-legged. Well, I don't know. I think Bigfoot is a man of great wisdom. Don't you, Mark?
Well,
Mark.
I haven't sat down and chatted with him, so I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah.
Well,
that'd be interesting to sit down and see if we could figure out how to have a conversation and, you know, see what they say.
Well, people have exchanged things. Like, they'll leave food and he'll bring plants. Or I've seen conversations over YouTube. And, of course, you know, you can believe some, you can believe all, you can believe none, all of the above or none of the above. But I like to play with these thoughts anyway. But that he has made an interaction with human, with two-legged, or with human, I guess, and he has traded things, but not on a verbal, like you say, sit down and have a little powwow. Not that, but I'm sure that he will teach us many things. Mostly how to survive, because he's been surviving for God only knows how many thousands of years.
I just got a note from Kevin Smith over the Kevin Smith Show, and he's going to be our guest next Saturday evening. We're working out the details right now, but his show is mostly about UFOs and investigating all kinds
mm-hmm.
of fun stuff. And
that's always fun. And
UFO paranormal, yeah.
Yeah, anything paranormal.
I think you'll be a fun guest.
I'm fascinated with it because that's the side that we don't see. That's our other dimension. And, of course, you know, in my youth, and not so long ago, I could admit that I have taken mushrooms, and I remember my first one was peyote, and I saw Wolf. Wolf is teacher, as you guys know. And, gosh, it must have been, this was in the States, and then I was in Mexico. This must have been 20, maybe 20 years later. I was talking to these Americans on the beach, and we're talking about shrooms and stuff, and I said, yeah, and all of a sudden it popped to me, oh, yeah, Wolf. Oh, my goodness, he's my totem. And he was my spiritual guide then, and he is. I see that he's with me all the time because he's teacher. And here I was teaching these kids, and I've taught a lot in all my, I think I bore my friends, the few of them that I have, because I'm not a very sociable person. I'm talkative, though. But I think I bore my friends because I talk too much about be careful and do this, and you have to do that, and trying to give them guidance. And I think I push too hard. That's a little bit extreme on my side. Tauruses always tend to be extremes, you know, either too hot or too cold. And like I was saying before, Mark, that I have to find that balance between myself, because so I can make my own peace within myself. Because I used to be, oof, off the handle. Too many
yeah.
too extreme.
Most people are that way when they're young, and they mellow out.
Well, apparently, I'm going to go be a rebel when I get old. I'm 63. How much older do I have to get to go on out to a revolution? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do it. I'll make the tortillas or whatever. I'll make dinner. I'll keep the fire going. I'm going. If there's for a good cause, I'm on it. And I'm 63 and I don't care. I think we have to have a rebel spirit.
And if there's anybody else out there and like to call in, we're at 347-996-3318. And
yeah, we've talked about it different things.
Yeah, it's fun.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's fun. Yeah, I'll just play. I'll play Shirley MacLaine some other time. I didn't think we'd be on that long, but hey, you know, whatever works.
Yeah, well, we've talked about Bigfoot, Nostradamus, UFOs. So I'm sure people out there will have lots of ideas to call in about. We're not on just one subject. Hitting a lot of them. Anybody
Absolutely.
With any legends?
Did you guys ever hear the clip of the NASA employee that went public about what he learned about the incoming planets when he was working for NASA?
No.
Live in the cave.
Let's listen to that for 15 minutes. We'll take a potty break and,
sure.
and listen to that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. I'm gonna roll it right now, and then I'll put you everybody on mute.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space, because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, like, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, like, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went in and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone. And this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it. And I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This
right.
thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball, because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street. and we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction. And you could see the planet circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully nothing in this mess will hit us, even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible. It says we can expect all kinds of problems. We were looking at asteroids. Right close to this thing, there's asteroids that are floating around right near the, that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across. And as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud. And you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will Italian 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing. This thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, it's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail. And if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay? Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay, well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it. And until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud. But as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to tell how hot it is, I was told that it was, they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees. But, you know, I don't really know, if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it.
Right.
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings, because you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us, listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They'll lose their, they won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on, because this thing will gut their brain. And, it, and you know, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens that nobody will care because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant kick the earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told. 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck so that that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy, that this could happen. And it very easily could gut everybody's brain for everything they ever knew, and they'll stand there and pee in their pants and go, gee, what was that? And that's if they still know how to talk. And there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind because this thing's going to look like a big red dragon, exactly like all the ancient Sumerians and the Chinese and all the rest of them that had documented this thing's passing before. It didn't look like a white ball or a snow cloud or nothing. It looked like a big red iron oxide dust cloud with a superheated star in the middle of it. And, I mean, you know, and that's what we've seen. So, you know, I don't care what anybody else says. There's a possibility. There's more than one thing out there. You know, I watched it through the Hubble Space Telescope. And when this thing looked like it was across the street, the Hubble got cut off and they encrypted it, and that was the end of any transmissions we had to watch. And we know that the Hubble, in order to be in the shadow of the Earth, had to be at an angle, and so that meant it was looking downward, and this thing was coming up underneath of us. And I tell you the honest God truth, I personally think this thing is real close to us right now. But, you know, that's just my general feeling that, you know, and I'm a pretty psychic guy. I have the feeling that this thing is right close by and that we're going to see it any time. I mean, I've been doing everything I could do to get prepared for it to... I'm really worried about what Jesus says. You know, when the fig tree is putting on its leaves, know that summer is near and I'm at your door. And that worries me more than probably anything I've read in the Bible about this whole thing, the parable of the fig tree, because everything seems to be in place for this thing's arrival. And the bad thing is he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, it does also say in the Bible that I'm going to make the sun go down at noontime in Jerusalem. Okay, if that's the case, there's only one thing that'll make the sun go down, not hit the horizon, down, go down at noontime, and that's if the planet experiences a pole shift.
Okay, I got a quick question that you can probably answer really quickly and then continue from the chat room. Wants to know if you're talking about Planet X or Elenin, and I've never thought Elenin is Planet X. Terrell's pretty
well,
stuck on that, but
is.
I think Elenin is a result of it. It's a comet that's been kicked in.
Elenin is extinction level event Nibiru is near.
Right.
Does that explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, because listen, they've known about this thing forever. And I mean, they've known about it forever. I mean, if I read about it in a science magazine in 1961, that tells you that, I mean, it's only 1,800 years away. How could they not be able to see it when it came around the backside of the last sun and headed this way?
Right, right.
You have to know they've been watching it, because if you, you know, Carl Sagan was showing stuff that they took with their old telescopes that was billions and billions of miles away, and this thing's only 1,800 years away. Well, and by 1930, it was only 70 years away. You know, we do estimate that this thing, let me give you a thing, maybe you can figure out your own timeline. We estimated that this thing is traveling around 3,500 miles an hour, okay?
Okay.
That was our estimate of its speed. Now, it has been picking up speed, and that's the reason why we think it's going to arrive early, because when it comes around the backside of the sun, it's got to double that speed in order to attain breakaway speed to leave the sun and not wind up orbiting it. It's never orbited the sun in the past that we know of, so that means that it's going to have to attain breakaway speed to head back out into space. Now, you look at the NASA videos, photos, and all this other crap those morons put on the internet. This thing is coming in. It's going to, as soon as it goes around the top of the sun, it's going to go pew, back out into space.
Right.
And it's going to do this really fast. When it goes past us, it's going to go past us so fast that we'll almost have no time to get ready. That's my opinion. But, you know, just drawing it out on paper a few times and thinking about it, and I went, you know, if this thing picks up enough speed to make breakaway speed, then that means it's going to come past us. You know, this thing, according to what I was told, is that this thing is approximately 47,000 miles in diameter, you know, four or five times the size of the Earth, and it'll come past us, and we won't have a lot of warning, and we won't get to see it in the sky until it's on us. I think the NASA timeline is completely off. I think this thing is going to arrive much earlier than they say it is. You know, I know they're saying October, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, now, I was told that the poles are not shifting at 42 miles a year. They're shifting at 42 miles a day. And the reason is because this planet is rolling over to face this thing. Now, when it goes by, it's not going to push our North Pole away. It's going to grab our Southern Pole with its Northern Pole. And it's going to be like somebody kicked this planet in the ass. That earthquake that it talks about in Revelations, when the opening of the sixth seal comes, from what I've been told, that's very accurate, because that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive earthquake when it locks onto us. As it goes past us, we're going to follow it right upside down. The oceans are just going to be roaring from pole to pole, as you could well guess they would, because if you take a planet that's 7,000 miles across and roll it upside down in 30 minutes, you're going to have some real serious problems with wind and water. We should be preparing to expect this thing to show up.
Well, you guys back with us yet?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's pretty frightening.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's and you know, and I remember back in, I was living in California when he was, back in the 60s, and you know, in 62, and I remember, you know, I'd go down and every week look for a Mad magazine, or every month, and there was, you know, there it was, you know, in Popular Science magazine, and they were talking about Planet X 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Good grief, yes. I believe it was even an old movie in the 50s.
Yeah.
But it's all very frightening, and I'm not saying it is, and I'm not saying it isn't, but what can we do?
Nothing.
But let's keep ourselves calm and in a positive mood. Huh?
There's not a thing we can do, really.
Just keep our positive thoughts and just love and send it out there, you know?
Yeah.
Cause and effect. Maybe we can love it away. I don't know.
If created.
We
well,
can do about it, though.
Rolling Thunder talked about this, he felt that that if enough people got together in a good way, that we could repel it or lessen its effects of its passing. Yeah, he talked about that quite a bit.
We have no clue as to the power of our minds. All these great monoliths and stuff that they, how did they elevate them? It's to me, it's just power of the mind, you know. Red Elk, he can elevate himself. And other people, as a group of people, they can elevate a table. And this is minor. Well, not so much in Red Elk's case, of course, but for, you know, regular human people to elevate a table, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that these people lived in another time closer to God than we are now, and did have their powers were a lot stronger, and they could all get together and probably elevate these big things, these big rocks. Could they?
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought. I think too much sometimes. I write down, you know, what I think. I get these, like Mark was saying, I'm on a roll. I'll start writing stuff down, and I'll go back and look at them 2-3 weeks or months later, and I'll go, oh, yeah, that's, did I write that? Oh, my God, that's some deep thought, you know.
Wow. Hey, we've got about a dozen listeners out there tonight, and, hey, you still have about 12 minutes left on the show before we have to hit the outgoing bumper music. But, hey, give us a call at 347-996-3318, and Mark will give you a Mayan calendar birthday reading. 347-996-3318. Oh, it's okay. We've got a pretty actually, it looks like we've got 20 people that have listened tonight. So, gotta be somebody out there that that wants.
Hey,
to
I'm
do...
gonna jump on my soapbox.
Sure, go ahead.
Legalize it already. You know what that is? You see it on my face page. People talk about marijuana as a gateway drug.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to get marijuana, you have to go to the streets to people who sell marijuana and other stuff. And, you know, of course, that's going to lead into that because that's the environment that it's in. It's in a dark alley or on a corner.
Yeah, that's right.
But with those of us who are medical marijuana patients and actually do need it, it cuts down your doses of the addictive drugs, the Percocets and Valiums and all those OxyContin and stuff. Those
exactly.
are extremely addictive. I've been through that. I've gone through that. And I don't have to take such a large dose of prescription drugs as when I can use the drops, because I prefer using the drops because it does a better body function, because I'm not into the mental high. I already talk too much as it is.
Right.
I think a lot. But
so
I
like something more like you like more like a chronic or something. Something that's
You know it. Yeah. But it's because I want to function. There's a sativa, which is an active high, and there's an indica, which is a downer high. And during the day, I will admit, during the day, when I can afford it, I will smoke the sativa so I can get things done and function. And in the evening, when I want to not roll around in the bed because of the pain, I'll smoke an indica, which is stronger. And I've seen going to the dispensaries is a place where you're going to find other people with the same reasons that you're going there for. You know, and you're not going to get mauled or mugged or raped or anything because it is an enclosed and safe environment.
Well, I was,
so
you know, I was watching
people,
that.
Yeah,
new,
a lot
that,
of people are.
Watching that new cop show NYC 22, and you know, there's more and more people lobbying for it, and it takes time. There's a lot of ignorance about it.
There's so much ignorance about it. I you know, Betsy Ross, the thread that she used was hemp. The first draft of the Constitution was written on hemp paper. Washington, Jefferson, Jackson, they all grew hemp before they grew cotton. Washington ordered everybody to grow hemp, not grow cotton, because it was a big seller.
Oh, you were fined.
They could use it for everything.
You were fined if you did not grow it. And it, you know, before Stan,
exactly.
before Stan Oil forced the issue, everything was lubricated with hemp oil, and hemp mm-hmm. oil were the two most number one and two traded commodities in the world.
In the world.
Yeah, sales, rope, clothing. The best clothing.
Uh-huh.
Clothing lasts
That's
forever.
Right. The Constitution.
Constitution was written on hemp paper. Absolutely.
Hello?
And you know when the first drug czar back in the 30s, when he was given that job, you know, he talks about going out on the key bridge.
Well, William Randolph Hearst was the one, because he had the newspaper.
Yeah.
He was the one that set it out there.
The first Fed, the first drug police guy for the federal government. I can't remember his name, but he was on the key bridge. He stopped and looked out, and he says it was growing, you know, 10 feet thick, you know, down on either side of the Potomac.
Yeah.
It was basically a law that. It was an anti-Hispanic law, and
they blamed it on the Hispanics because they brought it over.
Utah was the first.
It came on the Mayflower.
Yeah.
Tell me, hello. Look at the documentary.
Utah was the
Hulu
first.
Got some really
yep.
good.
Utah was
Hulu,
the first state to ban it.
Really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
Netflix has got all the documentaries on it.
Yeah, there are some excellent ones on there. But
just wake up people
Thomas,
and legalize
Thomas Jefferson,
it already.
Thomas Jefferson, you know, grew Centimillo. And
mm-hmm. And in his memoirs, what did he say in the afternoon? Do you remember? He would sit on his porch with his pipe and smoke hemp and relax and enjoy the beauty
mm-hmm.
of his garden.
Yeah.
So he said, hey, you watch Twilight Zone or Alfred Hitchcock. Back in the 50s, I was in the 50s, 60s, everything revolved around subservient woman takes care of her husband. Honey, you're home from work here. Have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
It
Putting another log on the fire.
Drink and smoke.
Yeah.
Watch an old Twilight movie. Twilight
mm-hmm.
Zone, pardon me. Twilight Zone. All they do is it's everything revolves around drinking and smoking, men and women. So, Thomas Jefferson, he just chilled out on his porch with his little pipe of hemp, you know, and it wasn't addictive. You don't go through all that. It's so unjust.
Well, you folks...
That might be my little...
You folks that joined us late, starting about 10 minutes after the... About 10 or 15 minutes after the interview's over... you'll be able to listen to the entire archive version. That's the way it works. And we'll be done here in about 9 minutes, something like that. So,
okay, Mark. So, where do you live?
I'm in Colorado.
Oh, that must be beautiful over there. I don't think I'd want to live there in Colorado because they got that big airport stuff going on underneath there.
I don't know. It's all right.
That's another can of worms.
I haven't been abducted by anybody yet. it's great. My wife and I go out in the mountains and go hiking out there and walking around and met a bunch of interesting people.
I bet.
Well, you're closer to Rocky Mountain National Park than you are to Denver, aren't you?
No.
Mark?
A little bit closer to Denver.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I lived in Crestone for a year. I lived in Crestone in the San Luis Valley for a year, and then I stayed in Walsenburg for about 3 months, and it's a beautiful place. It is a gorgeous place.
Yeah, Mark, you know, I remember seeing the pictures that you sent me of up there in Colorado. But you know what? I think I'm blessed here. You know, everybody lives probably where they live, but I think we're pretty blessed here.
We don't have to worry
especially
about water.
In this little town. Not at all. We go out and break a piece off of Tahoma, piece of ice.
Yep.
I know he'll give it to us.
It's a beautiful... I know you. It's just a little like a little country, like a little old West town kind of. And they've got.
It even looks like an old West town.
Yeah, it's a very charming little place.
I remember Will, you said you walked over to the store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you came back and you said, "I really like this town. People smile at you and say hi."
Mm-hmm.
And there's chivalry in this town. Men will open doors for you, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's about 3,000 people in this little town, Eatonville.
It's a gorgeous
little town.
There's
another Eatonville in Florida, but that was the first Afro American town. How did they say when they established a town?
Mm-hmm.
It was first Afro American established town in Florida was called Eatonville.
Is that the one they made the movie about? Didn't they make a movie about it?
Yes, Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Their eyes were watching God. And I looked it up because I thought they might have been kidding. And sure enough, Eatonville, Florida. But this is Eatonville, Washington. Western Washington. Beautiful. And this is the first place I've ever lived where I can walk through the woods and not worry about getting bit by a snake.
Yeah.
There are no rattlesnakes here.
Mm-hmm.
There are no rattlesnakes on this side of the mountains. And I miss them, too, because they're such good eating and good remedy. I have my dear friend David Craig. He goes to the sun dances up there in the Dakotas. And he says when he's going over the island, they're all over the place. They're just lying all over the highway. Pick one up for me for crying out loud. They're good eating.
I know my green beret friends learn to appreciate them.
Yeah,
they call themselves snake eaters. You know, that's slang for a green beret. They like their snake.
Oh, it's good. Chop it up with a little bit of tomato and pepper and salt and a little cilantro.
Not Navajo. The Dene, they call them. Schlen. Schlen. That's quite a word.
That's quite a word because there's a Yiddish word for same thing, but it's
same
shape, but not the same figure.
Yeah, anytime people start talking about rattlesnakes, I remember that sequence of Russell Means during Natural Born Killers, you know? You remember that movie?
Yeah, I'm looking at
Woody Harrelson.
I like his movies.
He knew they were there to kill him, but he let him do it because he wanted to go where his wife was. It was crazy.
Sure. When you're passionate about something, you'll die for it.
Russell's a trip.
And that's I'm looking at him right here on your webpage.
Yeah, I interviewed him back in late 2008, and what a sweetheart. And I tried to pay him respect, call him grandfather. He wouldn't hear of it. No, he says, just call me Russell, you know.
call Red Elk Abuelo in Spanish means grandfather.
Well, you know, we're going to get Ed McGaw back on, and I interviewed him
he's
twice.
He's great. I've read his book.
I was on his Facebook page, when they had that consternation about Obama eating dog. And Ed McGaw says, what's the big deal? I says, I've eaten dog lots of times. He says, every time Frank Foolscrow threw a, you know, a Sundance, he says they always had a milk-fed puppy, and they like their dog.
I did comment on that, and I mentioned the fact that we were with Red Elk, and I probably don't have enough time to tell this little story, but there was a lady there that couldn't understand why she might have to eat her horse. And Red Elk was trying to explain to her. And I said, can you give me just a minute here? I'll try to explain it to her. So he was gracious enough to let me speak to her. And I said, you love your horse, and your horse loves you, and we know that. Now, do you know you have a spirit, and of course you know that your horse has a spirit. Now, when that horse dies, his spirit takes flight, okay? He becomes one with the universe, whatever. I said, don't you think that horse, if you have to kill your horse to eat him to survive, don't you think that when his spirit is released, he will understand the true meaning of his life. So people who eat animals, horses, dogs, pets, I don't think I could do that with mine. I wouldn't. With my dogs, I couldn't. It's because they're my babies. And I know it sounds, I'm contradicting my own self, but if you have to do it, you have to do it. And I'm sure dogs would serve the Aztecs. They had those, they're called perros bichis, naked dogs. I can't remember the name. Starts with an X. Anyway, they had them as pets, and they raised them for food as well. So that's not, I can't remember the name of that dog.
I know, my dad had a good friend who was the
hairless dog.
Yeah, the Chihuahua. And my dad had a good friend that worked for Douglas Aircraft in the 60s. And this guy was a Quapaw Indian. They're Siouan. And Jim told me, he says, yeah, he says, if you ever eat dog, he says, just remember the red dog tastes the best, you know. Of course, he was kidding. You know, dog is dog.
Of course, he was talking about red dog.
Exactly. And but the Navajo, absolutely, that's another story I'll tell sometime. I think I've told it before, but we've looks like we're out of time, folks. And I want to thank Susie and Mark and Richard. Thanks for calling in, and we'll go ahead and play our outgoing theme music. And everybody out there, thanks for calling in tonight, and have a good evening.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh grade grandson of Savanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
wise of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Thank you.